Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on Apple Podcasts. Just search for Dog Works Radio, as well as all of our archived episodes on DogWorksRadio.com. You can also find us on social media, just searching for the same name. And calling in from California is our co-host. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. How are you?
All is well here in Alaska. How are things down there?
It's good. We're in the sort of June gloom period, which I always like because it gets really foggy in the evenings, and then the fog eventually will burn off during the day. But it's it's nice and relatively cool, and we're past the rainy season, so it's generally pretty nice. But it starts off cool and then warms up a little.
Excellent. You know, we are in the off season of the Iditarod mushing season, I guess, but it's never too late to talk about things that happen in the off season. And I know in just a couple of weeks they have the Iditarod picnic. It's when they celebrate the volunteers. They do the pick for the teacher on the trail, as well as the first day of signups. And there's usually quite a bit of buzz at the Iditarod headquarters that day. But we have some issues that we want to follow up from our last episode. We were talking about sponsorships and how things are changing in the race, aren't they?
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited for this show because in most cases we talk kind of directly about the race, and we do it from sort of the mushers' perspective, from the fans' perspective, but we're kind of going to turn things around a little bit and talk about some issues that we have alluded to in the past but haven't really spent a lot of time on, and sort of look at the race from the perspective of the Iditarod Trail Committee, which puts the race on.
Right.
Specifically looking at some of the financial issues of it.
You know, on our last episode, we talked about the news just broke where Wells Fargo pulled out, and the Iditarod made a position that the PETA folks, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they've been sort of a bane in the Iditarod side for years. They sort of alluded that they pulled out because of pressure from them. Do you want to follow up on that before we jump into today's show?
Yeah. So PETA, as you mentioned, PETA has been trying at least since the 1990s and maybe even earlier to get the Iditarod canceled. And they have this big attempt to pressure people, and there's lots of stuff on social media most years. It turns out that a lot of this, I believe, was attributable to one person who ran an organization, which I think was basically just her, and she would have multiple social media accounts and tweet out stuff about supposedly how the Iditarod was horrible and how dogs were mistreated. And, you know, without going into that in too much detail, a lot of it was information that either was very outdated. A lot of times it was stuff that was that didn't actually have to do with the race itself, or it was sort of taking things that are true and turning them around and casting them in a very bad light. So, for example, taking the fact that there are in many years, I mean, there were a few years where there were no dog deaths, but in most years there are a very small number of dogs who die. And so taking the fact that one or two dogs die and using that as a way to try to get people to, you know, to oppose the race and to and to you know, pressure sponsors and people to cancel the race. And I think their goal would be to have the Iditarod canceled altogether.
So as we mentioned, at least the position from the Iditarod and many that are involved with the Iditarod say that those PETA folks were sort of a driving force to get that done. But, you know, you had mentioned the one lady and her spreading rumors or kind of innuendos based on myriad number of social media accounts. And you know how it goes these days, Alex, with trying to update everything on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everything else that goes along with it. And, you know, that's how people are getting their news today. But I can only imagine how difficult it would be to have numerous aliases and trying to keep up with that. I can barely keep up with Twitter and Facebook at the same time with just one account. How about you?
Yeah, I have the same problem, but I believe that there are some tools that people use to manage multiple accounts. So, you know, you could always tell, because during the race there would be literally the same tweet, you know, letter for letter the same tweet that would come out from, you know, 12 different accounts more or less at the same time.
Right. So unfortunately, a very large sponsor, as we mentioned, Wells Fargo, did pull out, and I'm sure that they're kind of racing to fill that spot. But a couple of weeks before that, I guess maybe a couple of months actually, sometime here in the off season, an interesting development happened with the local Jeep dealership here in Anchorage. And for folks that don't know, the Jeep dealership, the Lithia, I believe it, the Lithia dealership here in town, they provide not only a heck of a lot of sponsorship money, but they also provide the truck for the winning musher. When they cross over to Nome, they get the truck and then the check, et cetera, et cetera. But that dealership's
not only the truck for the winner, but they also provide four additional trucks that are raffled off, because the Iditarod has this big raffle, and the tickets are about $100 each, and the four winners will get a truck, which is basically the same truck that the winner of the Iditarod gets.
Right, and they do that a couple of times a year. They do it during the state fair here in August, and I believe they do it as you get closer to Iditarod. But anyway, the owner of that dealership passed away here in the off season. What can you tell us about sort of how that is kind of muddying the waters a little bit?
Well, he had been a very, very vocal supporter of Iditarod, and the dealership, in addition to the trucks and I believe some cash money, also I think provided some other vehicles that were used to transport volunteers. So having that person who was so committed, and he had vowed that as long as he was alive, the dealership would be a sponsor of Iditarod. So having someone like that, who was such a vocal supporter, die sort of puts in question, and I don't think we've heard anything one way or the other, but it puts in question whether this will continue and how long it will continue.
Right. And, you know, it's an interesting thing, because whoever takes over that business, and I'm sure, you know, it's probably still remaining in the family, and it's a great big, it's a massive dealership. Right as you pull into Anchorage, you know, they have a huge sign that says, you know, proud supporter of the Iditarod, and a big dog team banner and all of this. But it's interesting how these sponsorships come into play and just how important they are. And again, we often parallel other sports with this. And I was just reading this morning, Alex, about Sports Authority, and they were the name sponsor of the Bronco Stadium in Denver. And it was a $5 million a year deal. but what they were saying in the article, it's typically a double responsibility. So it takes $5 million for the rights, but also about the same amount to promote that sponsorship that they offer, you know, saying, oh, yeah, we're the team, we're the, you know, the business of the Broncos, et cetera, et cetera. And what they said in that article was that sponsorship pretty much bankrupt the sporting goods company, Sports Authority. So in a time like today, you know, especially here in Alaska where times are tough, these sponsorships, not only the money that goes to Iditarod, but all of the money that flows back and forth the other way can really affect a business, can't it?
Yeah, it really can. The gentleman for the Anchorage Chrysler Dodge Jeep was named Rod Udd, and he was known as Idita Rod.
Right.
You know, he was really a gigantic force in that. I want to just back up for a second for people who are unfamiliar. It costs approximately $5 million for the ITC to run Iditarod. And there was an interesting article in the Alaska Business about where all of this money comes from. And the article is a few years old, but I think it's probably still pretty accurate. And in the article, Stan Hooley, who's the head of the ITC, said that they get about $1.5 million in cash sponsorships, another $1.1 million in in-kind donations. So that's things like the trucks being donated, Alaska Airlines and Penn Air donating flights and things like that. And then there's about more or less at this point about $275,000 to $300,000 in entry fees. They make about $250,000 in the Iditarider auctions for the people who ride the first 11 miles in Anchorage. And then the rest of that comes from various other sources. The people who've been up around Iditarod know that there's, you know, if you go to the banquet before the race, which is in the big convention center, the banquet is very expensive, and then when you get into the banquet, they're auctioning off. There's wine, and there's all sorts of stuff that you can buy, and all of that goes to the ITC, as well as, you know, ITC memberships that people have from all over the world, and part of the money from the subscription to the Insider and the GPS tracker goes to that. But so it's a lot of different things that make up where the money comes from. And in terms of the sponsors, they're divided up into groups. So there's the principal partners, and that's $250,000 or more. And then there's lead dog sponsors, which is $100,000 or more. Team dogs, which are $50,000. Wheel dog partners, who are $25,000. And then and wheel dog partners are $25,000 or up. And so you have like 10 wheel dog partners. I think you have 8 team dog partners. And I believe Wells Fargo was a lead dog sponsor, but not a principal partner. And so that's a significant amount of money to lose, maybe up to $250,000. The car dealership is a principal partner, so that's significantly more. But you know, as you mentioned, you don't want to start losing these sponsors. One of the things about Wells Fargo is that it's not specifically an Alaska-based business. A lot of the sponsors of Iditarod are Alaska-based, so presumably it would be easier for an Alaska-based business to not be as susceptible to pressure from outside groups. But you never want to lose anyone who's giving you a significant amount of money.
Right, and I had no idea that it cost $5 million to put on. And a lot of people, again, thinking about other sports, like the Super Bowl, for example, a lot of people think it's just that one event. But there's so much that happens all year long that that takes up a lot of that money, not just the, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks of Iditarod. But man, at $5 million, and what's interesting with that is so many people that are working with Iditarod are volunteers, all the veterinarians, all the trail checkers, all of the snow machine support, all of that stuff are volunteers. That is a massive amount of money to put on a race, don't you think?
Yeah, and, you know, there are a few people in the ITC and in the race who get paid. There's a relatively small staff of the ITC, and then I'm not positive, but I believe the race marshal and the chief veterinarian might be paid. But pretty much everybody else, all of the judges, all of the pilots in the Iditarod Air Force, those are people who are just volunteering, and the ITC picks up some of the cost of what they're doing. They pay, I believe, for the fuel and insurance for the planes. But they don't pay for the planes. They don't pay to rent the planes. The people who are the pilots who have their own planes volunteer the use of their planes for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. So as a fan, how does this feel to you? How does it affect you sort of, you know, when you hear things, again, going to other sports, oh, my goodness, you know, Coca-Cola pulled it out of the Super Bowl. That's a major thing. Just for an example, that would be a major hit to a sport like that. How does this make you feel as a fan when these big sponsors start pulling out, whether it be from pressure from groups like PETA or financial issues like we're going through here in the state? You know, the oil is there is an oil sponsor as well, and as we know, the price of oil is a heck of a lot lower than it was a couple of years ago. How does this make you feel, Alex?
You know, it makes me a little bit worried. It makes me afraid that the, you know, if, for example, ExxonMobil is one of the principal partners, and I know PETA has announced that they're going to increase pressure on ExxonMobil and on Coca-Cola, who are, I believe, a team dog partner. They're going to increase pressure on them to also pull out of the race. You know, it's certainly, you don't want to lose any sponsorship money, but it would be a lot more catastrophic if one of the principal partners pulled out, if ExxonMobil pulled out. So it does concern me. On the other hand, I know ExxonMobil is a company, I believe it's the first or second largest company in the world. So that is a company that does have pretty deep pockets. So in terms of being able to afford it, I'm not so much worried about that. But I would be worried as a fan if more of the principal partners or the major partners started pulling out, because you know, although $5 million seems like a lot of money to you and me, I think in terms of the scope of this event and the scope of all of the things that they have to do with that $5 million, it's not a lot of money. I mean, the Super Bowl probably, you know, when all is said and done, just that one game probably costs tens of millions of dollars to put on, with, you know, all of the stuff that goes on around the game.
Right. You know, my thoughts on it, Alex, are when the smaller sponsors start to pull out, especially if they pull out in mass. I know that they give a heck of a lot less money, but those boots on the ground type sponsors, you know, the more mom and pop type businesses, and maybe they only give $5,000 to Iditarod, maybe like an equipment sponsor or, you know, somebody for some prizes or something like that. I think that that's going to affect the race, at least as an event, more than it would if just one or two of these major sponsors pull out, because there's very large corporations all over the world that are probably just as excited to be in something like this as others. And this isn't the first time that big sponsors like this pulled out. I know, I guess it was in the late 80s, early 90s, Cabela's was a very large sponsor of the race, and they pulled out, as well as Timberland, who was kind of an equipment or clothing company. They pulled out as well. So, yeah, my opinion is when the smaller guys start running for the hills, I think that's where they're going to feel some real pressure, at least from kind of an awareness focus versus, you know, the big money.
Right. And I think also a few years back, Target was a major sponsor. They used to sponsor the Teacher on the Trail and some of the education programs. And they don't do that anymore. So you're right. We've had some of these bigger sponsors pull out in the past, and there have been other people who step up. I think, and, you know, again, I'm coming at this as an outsider, but it feels to me like the Iditarod is a special event for Alaska in a way that other sporting events just aren't. You know, a lot of other national sporting events, they're not tied to one place. They don't have that that identity for a place the way Iditarod does. And, you know, Iditarod is such an Alaskan event. So I would think and hope that that would be something that would be very important to Alaska-based companies and companies that that really have a lot to do with how Alaska works and how Alaska runs as a state.
So, again, just a little bit of speculation here, but I guess, you know, it was in the news for quite a number of days when the gentleman from the car dealership did pass away. What do you think about that? What if that sponsorship goes away and, you know, sort of the truck for the first place prize goes away? Do you think that has any bearing on potentially who signs up? You know, are people thinking about that when they sign up? Not only are they getting a $70,000+ check, but they're also getting a $50,000 truck. And, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at. Do you think that could be a major force behind people that sign up or want to race in this race as sort of thinking about it on a financial perspective?
I think it definitely could. But the other thing is, and again, this is just speculation because there's been no indication, at least so far, that they are not planning on continuing. But if they did pull out, I think that would be a very unique opportunity for another dealership to step in. You know, although Anchorage is a relatively small city in terms of the size of cities around the U.S., it's fairly large for, you know, it's a large city, it's the largest city in Alaska, and there's a few hundred thousand people there. So I think that would be a big chance for somebody else to step in and fill that role and get a lot of attention from, you know, from the press and from the public. One of the things when these companies become sponsors at this sort of level, they're able to they're really able to use the Iditarod sponsorship, you know, to promote themselves and to promote their businesses and use Iditarod is actually a trademark, so they're able to use that, and a lot of these businesses will have Iditarod themed events or you know, Wells Fargo I think used to have Iditarod days where all of their tellers in various branches in Alaska would dress up in Iditarod print shirts and things like that. So there's definitely an opportunity to cross-promote Iditarod with these businesses in interesting and creative ways.
Right. So times are a-changing for sure in Iditarod, not only with the new rules that have been recently passed, but also something that we have no control over at all, climate change on you know, how the snow is affecting the races in the last few years and how it affects the trail and where the race is going to be run, but also the financial aspect of how are they going to be able to pay the bills. And I think that just like everything, the Iditarod will evolve. It's definitely not going to be the race as it was in the 70s or 80s, and it may not be the race that it was in the early 2000s. Things have to change. Things have to progress. That's sort of how things work in the world. Is that right?
Yeah, and, you know, we like to think of these things as being kind of frozen in time and these things as being, well, I want it the way it was in 2010 or I want it the way it was in 2002 or whatever. But as you said, it's always changing, and that's part of what makes it so interesting. You know, new people come in, personalities change, and some of the details of the race and details of the sleds and the capacity of the dogs will change and get better over time. So, you know, I'm always cautiously optimistic about this.
I am too. I think it will continue on, at least in some form or fashion. It's been going on, you know, for 40 plus years now, and it's weathered the storm. I guess that's a pun we could use there pretty nicely. You know, they've had a lot of good press and bad press and lots of things in the middle. You know, everything in the middle has gone on. So I think there's not a whole lot to worry about, at least on that term, but I thought it would be interesting to bring up because, as you said, this isn't something that we typically talk about on the show. We're typically talking about the teams and the mushers and, you know, the story part of it. But, you know, this, you know, meat and potato stuff, kind of how they make the sausage part of it is just as important, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, we've talked a little bit or we've hinted at some of this stuff, but it's if you consider, you know, that you have all of these volunteers who have to be flown up and down the trail. You have infrastructure that has to be put in temporarily to provide phones and internet and, you know, support for 70 people who are 70 or 80 teams who are going to come in and be there for a day or two and then come out. That is all fairly complicated, and it requires thousands of volunteers, you know, a lot of whom are just in Anchorage or just there at the start, but a significant portion of whom will go up and down the trail to provide additional support at the various checkpoints and things. And it's Alaska, so you can't just drive there. You have to fly, and you have to fly in small planes, and you have to get people and material and food in and out of these various places, and that is not a cheap thing to do.
Good stuff, Alex, for sure. I'm glad we covered it today here on Mushing Radio. We have about a minute and a half. Anything else on your mind that you want to cover before we go?
No, you know, I'm very excited that we got to talk about this. It feels really good to take sort of a different approach, a different direction. And as always, if people have topics that they would like to see us cover, please hit us up on social media or, you know, various places, and we'd be happy to talk about lots of other stuff as well.
Excellent. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we will see you guys next time. Goodbye.